today on Rocking the Suburbs.
I do remember once when I was in the supermarket up in Hudson, New York, and they were playing Top 40 records. I heard this song and thought, who's that guy? His playing really struck a chord with me. Then I said, wait a minute, that's me. It was my playing on one of those Rolling Stones records. Hey everybody, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of our program. Today, we are going to be paying tribute and saying rest in power to the great jazz saxophonist Sonny Rollins, who passed last month. We haven't had a chance to address his passing, but definitely wanted to do so, as he is definitely considered a giant of the music. And I put together some notes here that I'd like to run through and tell you a little bit about the story of Sonny Rollins' life and music. The sources I used in compiling all this include obituaries written in Rolling Stone magazine, the Associated Press, The Guardian, used information from the source of all human knowledge, and my own research, books, and things, and whatnot. For those of you who may not know, Sonny Rollins was a tenor saxophonist whose distinctive tone and constant experimentation kept him on the cutting edge of jazz for more than 50 years. He passed on May 25th, 2026. Walter Theodore Rollins was born September 7, 1930 at a tenement house on 137th Street between Lenox Avenue and 7th Avenue in Harlem, New York City. His parents are from what was then the Danish Virgin Islands. His father was born in St. Croix, his mother in St. Thomas. Sonny Rollins came to jazz at an early age, first as a pianist before switching to saxophone. Rollins said, quote, "My mother gave me my first saxophone, an alto sax, when I was 7 years old. I got the saxophone and I went into the bedroom and I started playing. That was it." One of the prime motivators for Rollins to switch to sax was his love of the music of Louis Jordan, the early rock and roll pioneer. And if you want to learn more about Louis Jordan, we recently did an episode in our Heroes of Rock series, and you can find it episode 2380 on Rock in the Suburbs. Rollins honed his craft on the tenor sax alongside fellow Harlem classmates Jackie McLean and Art Taylor, jazz giants in their own right, and upon graduation, immediately joined bands led by established bebop greats like trumpeter Fats Navarro and pianist Bud Powell. One of Rollins' earliest recorded appearances was on 1949's The Amazing Bud Powell, a landmark in the hard bop genre that Rollins would soon pioneer. After recording with Bud Powell in 1949, Rollins began recording with Miles Davis in 1951. His bebop apprenticeship period also included sessions with J.J. Johnson and others on the Prestige and Savoy labels. His addiction to heroin was also a defining problem of this period. In 1955, he entered the Federal Medical Center, the only assistance available for drug addicts in the United States at that time, where he volunteered for the then experimental methadone therapy and was able to break his heroin habit. He began to form his distinctive voice during this period. But Rollins himself was somewhat ambivalent about this early material and tended to mark his own career start closer to 1955 or 1956. 1956's Work Time was Rollins' first statement as a leader, marked by his solos on standards like There's No Business Like Show Business and Cole Porter's It's All Right With Me. And this was a defining characteristic of Rollins' career. He often would take standards, tunes that were in the Great American Songbook and whatnot, and wring every ounce out of them that he possibly could via improvisation. Two more albums followed closely on Worktime's heels before Rollins went into the Van Gelder Studio in Hackensack, New Jersey with pianist Tommy Flanagan, bassist Doug Watkins, who died tragically in an auto crash just 4 days after the session, and drummer Max Roach to cut the masterpiece whose title would be applied to Rollins for the rest of his career, Saxophone Colossus. We'll be right back. You just heard Blue 7, a tune which was the clearest example of what musicologist Gunter Schuller described as demonstrating a new manner of thematic improvisation, developing motifs extracted from the song's main theme. Prestige issued three more LPs and Blue Note 1 before the next absolute jazz classic dropped in 1957, Way Out West. This was the first time Rollins recorded an album with only bass and drums, with no pianist or guitarist playing chords. Taking the piano out of the jazz quartet equation allowed Rollins' improvisational abilities to take full flight. Additionally, he recorded several songs best associated with country and western music, as his cowboy hat and gunslinger costume for the album's cover art implies. The cover photo was taken by celebrated jazz photographer William Claxton. Rollins stands amid a stretch of desert vegetation, dressed in a Stetson hat, gun belt, and an empty holster, and holds his saxophone at waist level, as if it were a pistol. The photo concept was Rollins' own idea to celebrate his first trip to the American West. This is probably my favorite Sonny Rollins LP. I just find every track to be really intellectually stimulating and super, super good and amazing. Why don't we hear Sonny's take on Johnny Mercer's song, I'm an Old Cowhand from the Rio Grande. Sonny once said, basically, if I had my druthers, I'd prefer the sax, drums, and bass format. I think that really gives the artist the most leverage and the most freedom to create. A three-piece lineup, Rollins, drummer Max Roche, and bassist Oscar Pettiford would feature on the saxophonist's excellent Freedom Suite. While Rollins later claimed that Ornette Coleman inspired him to play piano free, it was actually Coleman, who was influenced by 1957's Way Out West, with Coleman employing a similar configuration on his 1959 classic, The Shape of Jazz to Come, also one of my all-time favorite jazz albums. Way Out West is a great example of Rollins' robust exploration. John Fordham wrote in The Guardian last month that, quote, the personal nuances of improvisation meant everything to him, and that was why no two Rollins performances were ever really the same. In any handful of Broadway show tunes, sketchy calypsos, or torch songs, Rollins could hear the potential for spontaneous variations that would become the real material of the performance. Astonishingly, Rollins, at the white-hot forefront of jazz in 1959, took a three-year sabbatical from recording, but continued to fine-tune his artistry. Rollins said that he spent most of that time sitting on the Williamsburg Bridge playing saxophone. What made me withdraw to the bridge was how I felt about my own playing, Rollins told The Guardian. I knew I was dissatisfied. When he returned to recording, his comeback album was, naturally, titled The Bridge. Throughout the 1960s, Rollins met every new development head-on, participating in avant-garde and free jazz experiments, performing Latin jazz, and composing the popular soundtrack for the 1966 film Alfie. The decade ended with a second, longer sabbatical, during which he immersed himself in Eastern philosophy and yoga, traveling to India. It's a sprawling, restless phase with no single masterpiece, but tremendous emotional range. And it's also a great example of what fellow jazz legend Wayne Shorter meant when he once said, I don't have a favorite Sonny Rollins album. I just have the whole total of Sonny Rollins in my pores, my body, in my entity. In 1972, with the encouragement of his wife Lucille, who had become his business manager, Rollins returned to performing and recording, signing with the Milestone label. His lengthy association with them produced 24 albums in various settings. This is a long and uneven stretch, some of it brilliant, some of it commercially compromised. There's a mid-70s electric period that divides longtime Rollins fans quite sharply. In other words, they hate his sort of jazz funk fusion period that he went through when a lot of artists were doing it at that time. Some of the most important records from this period include G-Man, Old Flames, and Don't Stop the Carnival, a live album recorded at the Great American Music Hall and released on Milestone in 1978, featuring performances by Rollins with Mark Soskin, R.L. Rey, Jerome Harris, and Tony Williams, with Donald Byrd joining on 5 tracks. Let's take a listen to Autumn Nocturne from that live set. Thank you. 1981, Rollins made one of his most enduring appearances by providing the saxophone solo on the Rolling Stones hit Waiting on a Friend, with drummer Charlie Watts, long an admirer of Rollins, recommending him to his bandmates. There are people that burn bright and fade quickly, and there are those who burn bright and keep going. You have to admire that. Sonny has never made a bad record, ever. Some are simply greater than others, Watts said of Rollins in 2010. The Rolling Stones, I didn't relate to them because I thought they were just derivative of black blues. I do remember once when I was in the supermarket up in Hudson, New York, and they were playing top 40 records. I heard this song and thought, who's that guy? His playing really struck a chord with me. Then I said, wait a minute, that's me. It was my playing on one of those Rolling Stones records. Starting in the mid-1990s, Rollins experienced a late career resurgence. His 1998 album, Global Warming, was a strong set. And one of Rollins' most noteworthy releases this century came just days after the September 11th attacks. Living blocks from the World Trade Center at the time, Rollins was forced to evacuate his apartment with only his saxophone in hand. Just days later, on September 15th, Rollins staged a concert in Boston. It was later released as his acclaimed and cathartic Without a Song, the 9/11 concert. He also started his own label, Doxy, and documented his live performances extensively in the multi-volume roadshow series. In 2011, President Barack Obama presented Rollins with the National Medal of Arts. Obama said Rollins had inspired him to, quote, take risks that I might not otherwise have taken. Branford Marsalis described Rollins alongside Louis Armstrong as, quote, the greatest improviser in the history of jazz. Rollins did not perform publicly after 2012 due to recurring respiratory issues caused by pulmonary fibrosis and announced his retirement in 2014. Rollins passed in Woodstock, New York. Sonny once said, I think when the creative person ends, he continues in the next existence. I'm a person who believes that this life isn't the be-all and end-all of everything. A spiritual person doesn't feel like that. If you don't know Rollins' music and you want to dip a toe in, start with Saxophone Colossus and then go to Way Out West. If those two classics strike your fancy, look to Freedom Suite for an expansion of his vision and to Work Time for a taste of his early bop stylings. And if you love all four of those, well, you're hooked. Enjoy the rest of your journey. With that, we will say, rest in power, Sonny Rollins. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. We'll be right back. I don't have a favorite Sonny Rollins album. I just have the whole total of Sonny Rollins in my pores, my body, in my entity.